choose a class on family. That's it. Now, this is not about rearing our families at home. This is about the church as family. And so I want to think for a few minutes and kind of broad outlines what might have prompted that thinking, that desire, that goal to have such a class. And then understand that whatever I say tonight will just be a fancy word, maybe a foil against which they can operate for the rest of the quarter to correct and redirect things from there. But you understand that the timing of this is significant, right? Our preachers want to tutor us in thinking about church's family because it's part of the COVID recovery experience. In some ways, being a family was made more difficult. And so we've had to work at it, and we need to work some more at it. And that's why, that's at least my sense of why such a class was desired. But I believe this to be true, that COVID brought some new things, but it also simply intensified things that are already happening. COVID just brought into sharper relief some features already present about the difficulty of church as family. So I invite you to think about that, and I'm armed here with the official Kleinwood tablet again tonight. And so if you have a question you'd like to address, you're certainly welcome to raise it. I have the great opportunity to defer all questions until next week, and I will exercise that right arbitrarily, I assure you. So, let me remind you of a word that you know. By the way, I found out that quite a few people learned winsome for the first time this morning. How fun. I didn't even make that one up. But this word tonight is, I want you to think about the word atomized. Atomized. And to get a picture of it in your mind, I want you to think of an atomizer. And you've seen one if you're old enough to remember Pepe Le Pew, or the cartoon character. Remember, he went around, he had the little bottle with a bulb and a spray, and you squeeze the bulb and you spray a little mist of perfume. That's an atomizer. And it's called that because it takes some small amount of liquid and scatters it into separate micro droplets. Right now, fancier machinery in our medical time, some of you may know from experience with asthma or other kinds of treatments, where a nebulizer is used. What is nebula but just the word for cloud? Right, and so there again, a small amount of liquid is scattered in micro droplets, giving a better coating of the lungs, presumably. I may have just made all that up, but I think I'm right. And so you have, but the idea of an atomizer is this scattering of individual separate droplets rather than this one pool of liquid. Well, that word atomization gets used a lot by people who are talking about our social circumstances, not religiously, but generally, that the work of modern society scatters us geographically, scatters us relationally, and so even families have a harder time. Maybe I'm just confessing about my own family. I think there were more reunions. Come on, you know that experience, don't you? The reunion where there are 300 people there and you know seven. And the average age is, right, 79 or something. And there's one lady who knows everybody and how they're related, so stick close to her. Right, you understand that. That's what a reunion, that's what it's about. But it's about bringing people together. And that's I think, the goal, ultimately, behind our class, is we need to see ourselves as a family so that we can live well before God. Because, And this is just foundational. This is another way we have to reorient our thinking. We're no different from a lot of religious people in that our goal is to get individuals saved. I'm going to say this boldly. That's not the goal of the Bible. I'm only partly saying that's true. The goal of the Bible, you have to do that. You have to get individuals saved. That's true. But that's not the goal. The goal is to get a people. To get a people joined together. To get Israel. To get the church joined together. That's the goal. And COVID made that harder. But it was already hard. And don't you know that there are religious groups that try to orchestrate all manner of systems and methods and structures, buildings and programs to get people together? We need to get people together without doing that. We want to follow the pattern. And the pattern is people together. I want to look at a list with you. These are the topics that I plan to address. We may not get past number 2. That one matters. But we'll see. I don't intend to follow these in order. I want to go to the last one first. And I want to make a little history lesson for you. I think that is kind of a dying term, right? Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I'm going to guess that in your grandparents' generation, whoever you are, your grandparents, if they were in the church, if they were religious, were more likely to use the language of brother and sister and brethren than we are. Maybe not. And if not, hooray, I'm glad. But you see, that naming tells us something. That's simply a little code, a cue, that I see this person as not simply a member, right? Although there's nothing wrong with that word. I have fellow members at the gym, but I don't have brothers and sisters at the gym. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a gym member, you can tell. But I am brothers and sisters with a number of people in this room. See that? So the language is the language that we've imported is the language of family. Let me give you the history part, as I mentioned to you. When the French Revolution occurred, I'll back up one earlier group. When the Quakers formed, when the Society of Friends emerged in England, they used a lot of brother-sister talk, because they wanted to show by their naming that we defy this hierarchical structure that separates people into class, sir, right, lord. There's an equal impulse in the naming. French Revolution comes, the language of citizen becomes a common term. No more this sir, but it is the language of people joined together in a revolution. And then when the Russian Revolution, again, I'm not speaking approvingly of these revolutions. Please don't misunderstand me. But in the Russian Revolution, the term comrade emerged. Again, we're using the naming to show a leveling. And so here, when we use the language of brother and sister, family language, we're showing that this common unity that is intended. And so in the littlest things like that, we can see that we're trying to promote togetherness. It makes me think of Paul in Romans as he works to bring together Jews and Gentiles. You really need to see yourself, he says, as no longer a Jew who happens to be a Christian and a Greek who happens to be a Christian. We are one. We are one voice. Look in Romans 15 to find, if you look in 15, 5 or 6, there are about 5 different references to oneness there. One accord, one voice, united in in voicing glory, praise to God. So, just one little example. Let's go to Acts chapter 2 now. And we're in this famous reference at the very end of the chapter. And it seems like to me a good place to do some thinking. Because here are people who were just emerging as baptized believers. And what do we do? All right, so this is unfolding. They don't know. They don't have the pattern. Is not clear. And so they're practicing. And by the way, if again, historically, there are a number of people, a number of groups over the centuries who have used this passage not as an inspiration and motivation to see the gathered believers as family, but to see the gathered believers as a model of socialism, Christian socialism. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't panic. I'm not here to promote socialism. I'm simply suggesting that the Bible passage here has been used in that way. I'm not saying rightly. It simply has been. Verse 42. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And all came to every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. Familiar language. We're going to call attention to just two or three things here. Notice the breaking of bread is mentioned in two different places. It may not be the same. It may be that one of those is a Lord's Supper reference. Right? I think, again, next week preachers can clarify, but I'm guessing the first one may well be there, because that's more of a setting of a worship setting. And so to this morning, we were a family gathered, doing family things. And we need to see ourselves that way. We need to, and again, it's a learned vision of ourselves. But if you look in 46, day by day, attending the temple and breaking bread in their homes. See, that's suggesting another kind of breaking bread. So again, if I'm imprecise in this, it can be clarified by those who know more. But this one seems to be more of it's in the homes, and it is more of a social gathering, it seems. Again, I'd be glad to have someone challenge me on that. We can clarify, we can wrestle with it if we need. And maybe that both are about the Lord's Supper, but the sense of it seemed like that we are gathering together. These people were gathering, and they're gathering. And so it's one of the, why I've got that first word is together. Okay, now, we know that COVID made it hard to be together. And we could be together after a fashion, virtually, and we were pretty good at that. I think people were remarkably diligent and devoted. But it is togetherness of a kind. Now, those of you who see children and grandchildren by Skype and other methods, that's a wonderful opportunity. But, right? It is less desirable. So certainly we take advantage of the opportunities we have, but we can want more. And here, we see people who are together. All right. Now, we are together. Now, we're together on Sunday morning. We are together considerably at funerals, together considerably at weddings, together considerably at showers, the people of God gathering as families in all these different parts of our lives. But I can't help but think that through this long summer, Jeff and David are going to invite us to think about up in the ante here. Think about in a richer and fuller ways, can we be together? Now, I don't mean formal services, but simply, this is a defining feature of family, at least one, you could argue, is families are together. Now, I understand. Every family got a different story. But it's pretty hard to deny that that's a feature. Now, we understand another feature is that even when somebody's not there very often, when they come, they're enfolded into the group and their family, and we delight in their togetherness. That's true, too. But again, the goal, at least as I'm suggesting, one of the goals of family is togetherness. Maybe what all I'm doing is angling for an invitation for supper. Okay. We're going to set up a list. But you understand. And let me suggest that I don't know. I think that's happening all the time in smaller, different settings. But here, you understand that COVID did not start a problem with this. Modern life started a problem with this. Right? Modern life's beautiful in many ways, but it presents challenges. It presents the challenge of atomization, the very opposite of togetherness. Bring those drops back into one little pool and let's splash around together. Holding out hopes here. So that's the first point that I think, I can't imagine that won't come up somewhere along the way in this summer's studies. And I hope you'll think of this as a wonderful opportunity to think, how can I practice this? How can I practice this? Now, not to create some kind of fretful burden. Oh no, I haven't done what I'm supposed to do. No, but we can train ourselves to look for opportunities for togetherness. And there's not much. There's not much that can beat inviting someone into your home. And so I hope that's something that we can, again, set as a goal for yourself. Think about this. If you haven't had anybody in your home in a long time, then one goal, maybe for the next year, is to do it one time. And it doesn't have to be a lot of people. It could be one family, right? It could be two single people. It could be opportunities and possibilities are endless. But then you have personally taken the action to choose to promote togetherness by inviting someone into your home. Let me mention to you one of the reasons this... I'm going to try to be as direct as I can. One of the ways that we divide, now we're a pretty homogeneous group in a lot of ways, but I know some of you will chuckle, we could talk, we have quite a bit of differences in age. You can think of other differences, but I'm going to mention one that I want you to think about, and that is class differences. Now, if I come from a pretty small town in the country, and not a whole lot of class difference, you couldn't afford to put on airs because you're all alone. If you did that, there weren't any other. You're the only rich person around. So, not that I was that person, don't get me wrong. If you could have seen my 1966 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser station wagon with a dent in every door, you would understand. But there are differences, and so there are some people say, I don't want to invite somebody to my home. My home's not as large and as fancy. Okay? I'm sure that's true. And finally, you have to say, so what? I'm going to be brave. And maybe I don't cook fancy foods. I want you to know, I saw a casserole the other night. Come on, casseroles aren't very fancy. This one had little potato chips sticking out of the top. It got a little fancy. It had celery in it. But how wonderful. There's no person here that's not going to enjoy that togetherness that involves the breaking of bread, even if it's not very fancy. At any rate, here in this verse 46, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes. And then notice this, they received their food with glad and generous hearts. Right, generous hearts, a phrase I used in the lesson this morning. And I invite you to think about how this is another feature of family. We're generous toward people. Now, that I don't mean we have to tolerate sin. That's not the point. But we get that in a family, you tolerate weirdness. Nobody has to volunteer to stories about weird people in their family. But you've got them. If after we're through it tonight, you want to tell me about weird people in your family, I want to hear it. We may need to start on the all things in common. By the way, there's that language from this passage, all things in common, social. Because you could start swapping. Oh, that may not qualify as social, Troy. Not time to get you in trouble. We could have a weird family story contest. But that's the challenge. Can I see these three things together? I'm going to be determined to be together. And I'm going to be determined that some part of that is going to involve the breaking of bread. And I'm going to be determined to be glad and generous about that. As a giver of those things and as a recipient of those things. An invitation to use this passage as a source of reflection. I'm going to remind you, I'd have to go back and look particularly. I believe it's Isaiah 56. And in that passage, there's reference there to the foreigners and the eunuchs. It's either one, maybe one chapter either side of that. The foreigners and the eunuchs, people, we get to hang around, but when it comes time to serving up the dessert, when it comes time to do the family business, we're pushed back to the outside. We're kind of family, but not really. In that passage, God says, through the prophet Isaiah, you have no idea. Family is not defined by blood. This is Paul in Romans also. Family is not defined by blood. Family is defined by people joined together in grand fashion. Think about this. When Nancy and I adopted children and had home studies to prepare for that, the question we were asked is, can you love somebody who's not biologically your own? All you can do is turn and look at the person right there with you. Think about that. We're not biologically related, but we have committed to love one another until one of us dies. Right? So you see this togetherness. That's togetherness. I'm glad to be the one talking about this. I've been together with some of you for nearly 40 years. Right? It's been a long time. By the way, I've got an anniversary coming up this week. I said that to remind myself I better get busy. Okay. So, but we have these three things. So these are words you can take with you and ponder them. And I mean this in the most specific, practical way possible. I can ponder them. How can I work them into my life? My life. right? It's almost like kneading dough. I've got this, I can add the yeast or the baking powder, I've got to work it in. I've got to work it in. These ideas, I need to work in. And that's, I think, part of what's behind the thinking that Jeff and David are working through, is that COVID time has let that, the fizz escape. I shifted metaphors there, but you understand. Okay, I want to go to this one. I'm going to invite you to think first. An obvious place to look is, let's go look up the word family in the Bible. You just don't find it very much, except in the Old Testament you find it when we're talking about, you know, Abraham's family. And in fact, in reading recently about Exodus, you in some ways, you have the families come into Egypt, and in there they become this swarm of insect-like people. I mean, at least the commentator I was reading, the commenter emphasizes how these people are almost animal-like in their generation, creating this crowd of people. And then they leave and they become, and God, the purpose of Exodus is to create a nation. Think about that. So what are the operative terms? You have to learn how to be a nation. In the same way, we have to learn how to be a family. But why isn't the word family more prominent in the New Testament? Now, a couple of things about that. One, this word, household, may be the alternative, maybe the counterpart term. It may include the same references. I say may, but I'm not sure. But I'm a little bit puzzled. They know the word family. And so how does that ring differently? And so there's another place to that. Obviously, Jeff and David will work this out. What is the terminology? And Jeff can go Greek on us and help us understand how the, you know, how these words were used in another time and place. So it may be it's the same word. But think about this. Many of the things that are referenced in the New Testament like this, the church is the body. The church is the household of God. The church is the pillar, a pillar and ground of the truth. Right? The church, so metaphors are being used to try to capture an elusive idea. Well, maybe family is not a metaphor. Family is the practical reality. Now, again, I don't have an answer for that. I'm just introducing. But I invite you to think about that. I'd like for you to understand the possibilities that come from thinking about this household. By the way, I can't resist going Greek for at least a moment. The root word for household, the Greek word, is the word from which we get economics. Economics is really the law of the household. Nomos is law, kind of the management, and oikos is the echo part, is household. And so it's one reason why you have what seems like a very different word. Ecology and economics have that same root from the Greek word for household. And so that's the word we get here. See, here we have this reference in Galatians, where we're told to exercise goodwill and benevolence toward everybody we can. But then notice this, we have this especially. So these people belong to the household. That term is used, I think. Remember, Abraham worries that the heir in his household is... Okay, somebody can come up with that name better than I can right now. But here in Galatians 6... we see a reference to household. We're going to keep going. But we see in Ephesians 2 the same word. So probably all through the summer, it may not be there every week, but it'll be percolating in the background, permeating our thinking, I believe, this word. So then you are no longer strangers and aliens. Think of that language. So strangers, aliens, outsides. You're the xenons. And we could get, why do we have a chemical element named xenon? If you ask, I'll tell you. But here we have, you're no longer that. You're no longer an alien. You're no longer a stranger on the outside. You have been brought into the family. You've been brought into the household. Think about, oh, I just started thinking about the mafia there. We're not the mafia, don't get me wrong. But that language gets used by other kinds of groups as well. Okay, maybe I shouldn't go there. But you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. Do you understand? The word church, like so many words that we use that are important, the word church becomes a little comfortable. Like fallow ground, it needs to, may need to be fallow, but it needs to be plowed up to access the fertility. And the word church could become kind of inert. And so we might help ourselves by turning to this kind of, I'm not a member of the church. I'm a member of the household of God. Obviously, we are members of the church, don't get me wrong. But we are members of a household. So there are ways to use language to give a new twist. In the same way that using the word brother or sister to refer to somebody is a little different twist, especially in a world of modern suburbia. Brother. And that, you know, that crosses all kinds of boundaries when you start calling somebody brother. And here, who are you? Who are you? I'm a member of the household of God. In just a moment ago, I asked you to think about very particular things, about what casserole to make when you have somebody over. And that's important. This lesson invites you to think that way. We have to, or this quarter is going to invite us to think that way. But as I've suggested in lessons recently, at the same time, not only do we need to think in this very detailed and practical way, we need to have this grand sense as well. And if you think about it, family, that one word entails both of those. Family means we do stuff. Mark Thomas has done things because he's family. Everybody in here, he's family, she's family, they are family, we take care of family. Right? See, that's you notice how there, that means very practical things are done. At the same time, it means something grand. And that's what we're trying to train ourselves to see both levels, the grand and the particular. We're not through. There's another, at least one more up here that's a household. If I delay, Paul talking to Timothy, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God. Well, which is the church of the living God. Notice here, Paul is actually stirring up our thoughts with our language a little bit by saying, he doesn't say the church of Christ. He doesn't say the church of God, the church of the living God. See, we're going to use naming to force us to think, challenge our conventions, force us to redirect our thinking. And one way we do that is by using labels, different labels for the church. But here, the household of God again. But notice this. There's a way to behave in the household of God. And so this gets us to economics. What are the rules of the household? And this, what is the pattern that we should follow? But notice it's given in terms of this word at least that is somewhat related to family. Can we do that? Can we pursue this double-sidedness? Now, I'm assuming that in their particular pursuits, David and Jeff are going to invite us to go both directions. Some lessons will take us maybe into more of the granular details of what it means to be family. And at other lessons are going to challenge us to transcend the pedestrian stuff and cultivate this large sense of what it means to be a family. And I invite you to begin that work on your own. That way you can come with questions. Think both directions. That's a homework assignment. Every week at least, you could think, try to have one thought each direction. One thought toward the particular and one thought toward the grand. And each of those has a place in making this work. Because there are people in this room who worry that we're not together enough. So what do we do about that? Well, you get together. Not with everybody, somebody. And then do it again. And I know we've had people in here who have done coordinated things in admirable ways. And I think there's room for some of that as well. All right, let's see. I've got one more slide, I believe. Yes. I put this slide up because look at the last word. Now in Romans 14, the famous passage about making choices. And you'll look and you'll see that here, this is, in a sense, this combines our two parts. Notice what we have. Therefore, let us not pass judgment on one another any longer, but rather decide never to put a stumbling block or hindrance in the way of a brother. I put this slide up for one reason, this verse, because it uses the word brother. Right? So we come back to that last of our terms on our list. This is Paul's language. Paul writing to a congregation that seems to be mixed with Jewish Christians, Christians of Jewish heritage, and Christians of Gentile heritage, Greek heritage particularly. And he uses brother to bridge. Let us think of that. So that's the reason I put this up here, to remind you what you already know. This is so common that many religious traditions, apart from our own, are famous for using this. And even it's remember the Latin word for brother, frater, where we get our word fraternity. So, I want to push on, though, to see something else in this verse, just one other little part. This one verse has the two parts I mentioned already. Think about that. Look at the verse and see if you can see. Remember what I said, there's the particular down there, very specific little practical things. And then there is this higher exalted vision side. And I promise you that our good living depends on our ability to attend to both. All right, so when I look at this, for me, the word stumbling block, and that's a metaphor. It represents a whole class of possibilities. But every one of them is specific. Let me just give you another one. Going back to bread, there may be somebody in here who has gluten challenges. Right? Or you may know somebody with diabetes and challenges that come with that. And so if you're going to invite them into your home, you're going to consider, I don't want to put a stumbling block in their way or whatever any other circumstance might be. I've got to be very practical. What does it mean for me to take care of this brother? Right? You understand that? That's common sense. We do it all the time. I just invite you to keep doing it. I invite you to be, in fact, expand the circle of people you know well enough to know what the stumbling blocks are for those people. That's a good practical challenge. Now, The grander part of this, it seems, at least to some extent, the grander part is that here we have a brother and he is more important. Our relationship, my promotion of his flourishing is greater than whatever this thing is, eating meat, right? In that passage, remember the famously says, do not destroy with your meat him for whom Christ died. See, what you eat, what you put on the plate, that you can't get any more specific than that. There will be something on that plate. What will it be? I'm speaking somewhat metaphorically, but only somewhat. The other consideration is not what's on my plate, but who this person is. And notice what he says in this chapter, this other verse I've just quoted. This is not a person named Fred. Paul renames him. Paul says, he is him for whom Christ died. That ups our game a lot. We're not just killing time. We're not just trying to torment this fellow who happens to be gathered with us for bread or meat. So, let me go back to our list of five. I invite you to, well, hope for better things from Jeff and David when they come. And you know, there, I think, this format of the text talk shows great potential for this topic. I want you to think about that for a minute. How the topic and the message go to, the manner of approaching it go together. Because, now, I didn't do it this way just to show you the other side and as a contrast. It will be, but it's just the way things are. But you understand what they're going to be doing. Think about it. What they've done before. They're going to engage in a conversation in front of us. Right? And they're going to be together. Right up here in those chairs, looking mighty comfortable. Even kind of dressed alike. Finishing one another's sentences. And they're going to be enjoying this. They're going to be delighting in each other's company. But it's in the conversation, right? The talking back and forth where they are in the way it becomes the means of being together. And we get to listen in and we get to be together with them. But think of this also, is just how much conversation is a part of being family. We talk together. Now, obviously, I've bloviated for a long time today, but in many family settings, I don't talk very much. And I think it's a limitation on my part. I think it's done harm. And so I invite you to consider that, because when we converse, once again, conversation bridges these two worlds. Conversation takes us down to very particular things. And when you listen to somebody talk about something very particular, when they're telling you about something that matters to them and you're just listening for all you're worth, you know what you're doing? You're saying to that person, we're family. You matter to me. I want to hear you. I want to know you. I want to know about your gluten-free status. I want to know about everything about you. I want to listen in, because conversation is the way for us to live family. And that's going to be that particular level. But when we do that, we are enacting the larger level, and that is we're together. And we're saying, this is not a race that I'm on pursuing on my own. Hebrews 12, Brother Klutz has just worked this with high school students recently. Hebrews 12, you recall the language. Lift up the knees that are weak and carry them along. I remember stories. Now, we can't compare with Odessa Permian, but I used to hear stories about the Cameron Yeoman, my brother-in-law, now deceased, Moose Fisher. That tells you all everything you need to know right there. Moose Fisher. Big old boy. And this coach decided it's time to see who really wants to be on this team. Come on, you know, at the end of the practice, we're just going to keep running till somebody quits. We're just going to keep running. And you know, my brother-in-law and two or three other guys, I don't know how many it took, before it was over, they were dragging Moose Fisher along. Because Moose Fisher was ready to quit. No, you're not. They were lifting the knees. They were living. I don't know if they knew Hebrews 12 at that time. But they were living it. And you understand that we have the opportunity to live Hebrews 12. And you have the opportunity. You may be the Moose Fisher. Think about it. I feel that way sometimes. Maybe that'll be a new text somebody. You can send somebody. Are you feeling like Moose Fisher today? No, I've got it today. I'm all right. How about you? Or you might be like my remarkably noble brother-in-law. Not only noble in that moment, but noble in many ways through his days. You could be one of those who helps to lift somebody up. And why do you do it? Because they're family. You don't do it just because somebody is a member. I don't know, that word just doesn't seem to work as well. Maybe it does for you. And if it does, I admire your abilities to kind of transcend the tendencies of the language. But I want to promote for us the language of family so that we can live well before God. And so I can get an invitation for supper. Together, bread, the generous heart, the household of God, brother. Let's pray together. Holy God, thank you that you have said again and again and again that you want a people. And you want to be their God, and you want to be with them, you want to dwell with them. And we thank you that you have chosen in us and in your church to be with your people. Help us. Help us consider richly this summer. Help us to follow the example of David and Jeff as they sit before us conversing thoughtfully about what it means for church to be family. Help us to join in that. Help us to go home and reflect about the particulars. How can I practice daily, or somewhere in the week, how can I practice this particular skill of being a family member? Secondly, how can I let a large and grand vision of family loom large for me so it will help me to pick up the people who struggle and to allow them to pick me up when it's needed? Thank you for the patience of these good people. Thank you for the opportunity to attend to some of your words tonight. We thank you in the name of Jesus. Amen.